Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
For the Corlin Hartfield Report, some of you who lived in the Portland, Oregon area or any of the stations that carried this particular program about 10 years ago were remembering that it was very similar to the Corlin Economics Report, except my co-host was Michael Hartfield. Michael is an old friend of mine. Michael is, as McKinney was, very, very well informed politically. And the purpose of our program is to get some opinions, for us to give you some opinions on what exactly, how exactly we feel about things that are going on in the government. Let's start out right now so you know where Michael stands on this particular subject. Michael, let's talk a little bit about the president. Do you think he's going to get reelected?
I don't think he's going to run, Al. I think the party is going to force him to withdraw because of health reasons, probably within the next 6 or 9 months, so they can bring somebody else in to run for the presidency as a Democrat.
Okay, any idea who they might bring in? I believe, personally, with everything that I have read and witnessed on the various news channels, I think the governor of California is the man they're going to bring in.
I think that is the popular opinion. I kind of doubt that that'll happen, but I don't know who it will be. I have a feeling that they are working very hard to try to come up with acceptable people. And okay, I think he is probably a little too far left for most of America.
Well, I don't know. He's a pretty popular guy. He's not exactly a one-term governor so far, Mike. What I have, pardon me, what I have found out is that I would agree that as a governor of California, he probably has not done exactly that great a job. You look at the street people in San Francisco and Los Angeles. You look at the taxes, and I really don't think he has done that good a job in California. Mike, give me your opinion on that, would you?
I think, Al, the issue here is that he is the governor of California, and California is left of most states in the United States.
You bet.
He's been out there on his own, and I think probably if he were to run, he would have to moderate his stance in many, many ways, and I don't think it can work for him. He's been a lefty governor so long that and he's part of that whole Pelosi family, and I don't think he can walk away from his record. So I think they'll smear him with it.
Yeah.
And he'll have to live with that record, and I don't think he's electable under those conditions.
Mike, I got a question for you. You used to be, and I may have the title wrong here, and if I do, pardon me, but when you and I were basically doing radio, just before you and I were doing radio in Oregon, you were the administrative assistant for Governor Bob Straub, correct?
No, I was the press secretary. There were two men in the office that were principal advisors, and the one is the executive assistant and the other is the press secretary, and that was my job.
Okay. Are you seeing, I mean, you were head over heels in politics back in those years, I remember, Mike. Do you see any difference today in the political spectrum than what you were dealing with a number of years ago? And if so, what?
Oh, Al, it's we have become further and further apart. Now, that was in the late 70s.
Right.
So we had been through the Vietnam War.
Right.
We were fairly well divided after that war. I think the division is now deeper, and the left has gotten into the schools in a much greater way, and the reaction of most people has been pretty quiet. Not much going on in terms of reaction, but I think it's building. I think it's building, and it's going to come to kind of, if you will, a boil.
Yeah. Okay.
So I don't know what that'll look like, but I do feel that whatever has been going on for the past 25 years is coming to a head, and there will be changes made.
Now, Mike, let me ask you this. A little more difficult question possibly, but just let's stretch your mind a little bit. Do you think we're going to go back to being a little bit more of an honest country and a little bit more of a conservative country?
Oh, boy. I think probably it's hard for me to imagine, Al, that we can move much further to the right. I think we're the left is so embedded into our society. Every student who comes through the school system is indoctrinated with that philosophy, that political philosophy. They've learned to dislike America. I don't know how you come back from that. I would love to think that it can be done, but I don't have a lot of confidence.
I want you to elaborate on one thing, Mike. Do you really think the left dislikes America? They certainly dislike it the way it was governed under the conservative or the right, but do you think they dislike America as it exists today?
They don't like the history of America. They judge history by current day's mores and standards.
Yeah.
And, of course, in 1776, it was a different nation, so things were totally different. And so they don't, historically, we don't live up to the standards they've set for today. And so they don't like the founding of America because it was founded with allowing slavery. So they don't like America because of that.
Right.
And I think there is a deep dislike and distrust of the nation that they live in. And I say they because that's not me.
That's not you. No, it very definitely isn't. I've known you for a lot of years, Mike. I almost knew you when you were a student at, if I'm not mistaken, Reed College in Portland, Oregon. You're a great guy. You're a very bright guy. I have valued your friendship for a lot of years, and I can't think of anyone who I would rather work this particular program with. We have a very active, or at least at one time, had a very active blog, about 100 comments a day. The people are unique in the sense that they are all very definitely free thinkers. And I think if you decide to get involved in the blog, you're going to make an awful lot of new friends. You've got some very good ideas, Mike. I remember some of the political discussions we had years ago, and you, quite frankly, are the original, as far as I'm concerned, conservative who came into my life, and I certainly appreciate it. Hey, you guys listening in, you're going to like this show a lot as we progress in the months ahead. Going to take a real quick break right now, and then we'll be back with the second segment. Stick around.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
time for a little bit more elaboration on what Mike and I talked about in the prior segment. I feel it a real honor to have Mike co-host this program. Mike and I did a program, as I mentioned, in the prior segment in the Portland, Oregon area that was carried on, I don't know, probably three or four stations. Pretty popular program. It was called the Corlin Hartfield Report, and it was strictly involved with, what's the best way to put it? It was strictly involved with politics. Mike, what's going on?
That was a jet plane where I'm near Luke Air Force Base.
Was that a jet plane over it?
That's what it was, yeah.
Free All right.
America, keeping us free, Al.
Let's not worry about starting over. Yeah. Let's just continue here.
Sure.
Tell us, Mike, how you got involved in politics.
I spent my formative years in a small town called Ely, Minnesota, and it was an iron mining town, and the iron mines were closing up, and the environmentalists had made the boundary waters up there free from flying and using motors and
right
all kinds of things, made it a wilderness, and I didn't think that that was bad at all, but I was very concerned about the people of that town who had lost their jobs and lost their way to support their families, and I could see the social costs of all that in terms of too much drinking, all kinds of hospitalizations and things, serious things that happen when people can no longer support their families, males and females. Anyway, that was on my mind as I grew up, you know, as an adult. And so when I've always thought, if I'm going to do something, I want to do something that makes it a better place for mankind in terms of being able to support families and keep economically afloat. So that was why I was kind of interested in politics, and I got interested in economics because economics and politics at one time was a single discipline. They weren't spread out. You couldn't take a class in economics and a class in politics. Political economics was one discipline, and they are very much joined at the hip. And so I got older and I went to college and I took I was a political science, and I also took economics, and then I was in the journalism business for about 15 years.
Let's talk about that, Mike.
Sure. Well, I went to work for KPTV in Portland as the anchorman on the 10 o'clock news, and I did that for a few years, and frankly, Al, I left it, and I left it because I didn't feel genuine. People would meet me at a cocktail party, and they would talk to me as if I was an important person because they'd seen me on television. And I knew what I was doing was glossing over headlines and things like that. And I knew I wasn't really important at all, and it bothered me a lot. Internally, it bothered me. And I finally decided I had to leave it because it was what it was. And it's only gotten worse since then. The news business is now in shambles, at least television and radio news.
Why is it in shambles, Miguel?
Well, I think it is, Al, because first of all, serious people are not in that business. People are in there who love the camera, and that should not be. It should be journalism first and being on camera way somewhere second or third. And I think it's money driven, for one thing. You know, you got to make money to have a television station or a newspaper. You've got to have people who were tuned in, and they started to get in the hands of consultants. And that was happening while I was in news years ago. The consultants will start to tell management what kinds of stories should be covered. So that's why you see stories about a lost pet and a cat, or a grandmother that takes her grandchild to the hospital, or, I mean, those kinds of fluffy stories. When you only have what we call the news hole, and that is out of a 30-minute newscast, when you subtract the opening, the closing, and the commercials, you might have 17 minutes of news.
Right.
Now, we've got a big world. We've got a democracy, so to speak, a republic democracy here in the United States. We should be learning about what's going on here. You've got 17 minutes to deal with it. If you start to deal with cat stories for 4 or 5 minutes of it, now you're down to, let's say, 12 minutes. You cover a couple of sports stories. Now you're down to 8 minutes. Then you do weather. Now you're down to 5 or 6. That's not serious journalism.
No, it's not at all.
Not at all.
I think what's happening today, though, is what concerns me, quite frankly, is the fact that I almost think that the government controls the news today.
More so than ever, Al, as we saw in the last 4-year cycle here, when the government started, the FBI started telling the people at Twitter what to say and not to say.
Right.
That is the most dangerous thing. There are a couple of things very dangerous to me. One, the IRS getting involved in politics, which they did a few years ago and probably still are. And the FBI becoming political. I know that the CIA has always been terribly political, and I'm sure even under Hoover, the FBI was somewhat political, but, you know, it's the largest law agency in the world. It needs, for our sakes, you and me, citizens, that FBI needs to be as pure as possible, and it simply is not.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I think, and the former co-host on this show, Jim McKinney, who's right in the middle of politics, really felt that way also. You know, he felt that the news was pretty much a way to make people think and nothing else. I think Jim probably, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but the New York Times is probably the best example of government centered by news. Mike, we got to take a real quick break here. We got the top of the hour news coming up. You guys, we're going to be right back in just a few minutes. Stick around.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Being a veteran newscaster, Mike is going to give us his opinion on a lot of things that Jim and I used to talk about in terms about fake news. One of Donald Trump's favorite expressions is the comment about fake news. Mike, what's your comment on that?
You know, Al, when I was in journalism, it was nice that if there were something happened across journalism, they felt they reported something poorly. For example, you remember in the days when we had odd, even license plate fill up with gas, and when the OPEC push was on?
Of course I do. Of course I do, Mike.
Sure. 30-some years ago. Anyway, the news directors met to talk about how we reported on that, because it wasn't done well. And mainly because journalists, very few, understand the economy at all.
Yeah.
They understand a little bit about politics, but anything to do with numbers, journalists run away from, because most of them went into journalism because they couldn't deal with numbers. So they didn't like the sciences.
Okay.
But what they would do is meet, and then they'd say, well, what are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? Why did we get that story wrong? And they'd make some changes. So here we are in the last few years, journalists in the main have become very, very liberal, very woke. And the stories they report are from that perspective.
Why do you think that is, Mike?
Well, for one, it's the academic training. The schools have become more and more leftist. And the you remember the hippies in the 60s, Al?
Of course I do, and so do you.
And unfortunately, many of those people were in academia at the time, and they went on and got PhDs, master's degrees, and became professors. They have been for the last 30 or 40 years all over the universities. They have directed the flow, and the administrations of universities have buckled under to it, and they have become the same, just like these professors. So the whole thing every year slips further and further to the left, and journalists come out of that nest, and they can't imagine. I here's the metaphor I use, Al. If you're in an oxygen-rich atmosphere like we are, you don't know you're in oxygen. This morning you never thought about it. But if I took that oxygen away, you would start to die. You'd know immediately you had a problem. These journalists are in a liberal atmosphere. They're floating in a liberal atmosphere, and they don't understand that there is another side. They can't see an area where they're not oxygen rich. And so they're very comfortable where they are. And if they hear something else, they don't understand what they think it's evil. They don't understand that there's another side to history, to the story. So the news directors, what can you imagine reporting as they're doing today with this kind of bias? And the news directors don't meet somewhere like at Columbia University and say, what in the heck is going on here? They don't do that. They're not doing that. They're just report. It goes on as if it were a normal and natural thing to do. So I don't have a lot of hope for journalists. That's why we have so much shows like like this and podcasts and these other things that are coming up. Fox News was kind of one of the first to come around the mainstream media and fill in the blanks. And that will go on there. That's going to get bigger and bigger. And eventually we're going to lose network news altogether.
Mike, let me ask you a question. Now, we have a president sitting in the Oval Office today. They're really, quite frankly, in my opinion, we could talk about this at some other point, but in my opinion, really isn't qualified to be the president of the United States. And I think he's proven that over and over and over again during his term. Why, in your opinion, Mike, does the mainstream media, the New York Times, the Washington Post, etc., why do they support the guy? Why don't they report it really like it is?
I think they support him because he is a continuation of the Obama administration, and I think he's being run by Obama people.
Okay.
And the media was very much approved of what Obama did. They approved. You know, you say, we all say, that
right.
That President Biden's making mistakes. I don't think he's making mistakes. I think he's doing exactly what he's told to do and feels fine about in his current state. I don't know. I know that at one point in his life, he would not have agreed with the stance he's taking because he said so himself. But today he does.
Yeah.
And he's the border, for example, that's not a mistake. That's a policy. They're doing that on purpose. There's nothing stupid about what's going on here. It's all done by design.
I think you're right. Now, let's talk about a couple of issues that I think are very, very important that I believe are done by design. Let's start out with the southern border, Mike. The southern border is a mess. We are getting criminals coming into the country. We are getting terrorists coming into the country. And everybody believes that the reason the Democrats are doing nothing on the border is to increase their electorate base. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would agree with that. It's bigger than that, Al. I think if you thought about the Great Reset, what's going on out of Davos, for a long time, I watched a speech the other day by this, I can't remember his name right now, but he was back in the John Birch Society. He was a big speaker in those days. He was an old man by that time.
Yeah.
And he was making this speech about what's going to happen is we're going to become, and the United Nations was just starting, there'll be more and more push to an international government. And what we're seeing in the Great Reset is exactly that.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree.
The sovereignty of the United States and the sovereignty of a citizen in the United States will cease to be. You will be a citizen of the world, and you will be compelled to do what the world wants you to do. It's already happening. We're supposed to give up all these things for the good of, quote, mankind.
Yeah.
Put a mask on for mankind.
Right.
Get a shot for mankind. Buy an electric car somehow. We'll talk about that someday. For the good of mankind. All of these things are for the good of the world, not for the United States and not for the citizen himself.
I think I agree with that. I know I agree with that 100%. And that's basically what we concentrate on, Mike, on this particular program, is we are becoming citizens of the world, globalists, as opposed to citizens of the United States. And I think that is really a shame. The reason I say that is eventually when you have a globalist society, some terrible person is going to take over as the leader of that globalist society, and it will be very, very difficult to even think about changing that particular situation. I'm certainly seeing it right now, Mike, in the sense that the Chinese certainly seem to support it. The Russians certainly seem to support it. It's a damn shame what we're turning into. Mike, we got to take a real quick break for our advertisers. You guys will be right back. Back, time to wrap up KER Politics. You know, I've been around this audience, Mike, for a long time. We've got business people, we've got investors, we've got economists, etc., etc. Let's talk about how these audience can utilize our site to their advantage, utilize this program to their advantage, okay?
Sure. Al, it's all about information, right? We know that.
Yeah.
The more informed you are, the better off you can handle your money, your business, or whatever it is. Now, to be really informed, it'd be nice to be in Congress where you know laws are being changed and you can do a deal before it gets done, right?
Right.
We used to call that insider trading, but the Congress people seem to be able to get away with it and make themselves pretty dang wealthy. I think probably that it's important for us to understand that this change is taking place. There are things that are happening that are absolutely important. AI is a industry, a game-changing part of the industry. that is, they say, many people say, is going to be bigger than the internet. Now, you and I were friends when the PC came out.
Right.
And unfortunately, we never figured out how to get hold of that thing and do something with it. Although it came up around us. It grew around us. We were in Portland, Oregon, and high tech was big. Intel was there, and there was a lot of high tech business, but we never were able to tap into it. AI has more of a, it's coming on again. We might have a better chance. Our investors might have a better chance to find the right companies. I would be looking for companies that make chips, that AI, if AI is employed, there will be many, many more chips made. So I think chips is a good place to be. But in terms of the world and our sovereignty, it's going to make a big difference on what we can do. We don't know for sure if our 401ks are going to be intact. If we go to kind of a world-type government in the next 10 or 15 years, I'm talking now about investors who were, 50 years old and looking for something in maybe a 10 or 15 years for retirement, it could be that that 401k won't be there for them. It will have been absorbed by the government. Now, that sounds kind of doomsday-ish, but I think there are signs out there that point toward that. So I think you'd be aware of that, and that means, you've talked a lot over the years about holding physical gold. That's probably a good thing. Real estate is still, I think, a very good place to be. The interest rates are up. So right now, the demand is huge. New construction is terribly expensive, but prices are still down a little bit, relatively speaking, in real estate. If one can get into some real estate, I think in the next 5 years, that's going to pay off big because the demand is there and people are sitting on their hands, not buying homes because the interest rate's too high. They're going to come back in the market if and when the interest rates fall. People have to have a place to live. So that's one of the areas I think is good. And so I think we have to kind of look at how we can protect ourselves. I love to have a plan B. I don't know what it is. Is it a house in Portugal? I don't know. But I like to have a plan B so that I have a place to go if things go upside down. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist. On the other hand, you don't have to be a conspiracy theorist to know that a lot of people are planning and plotting behind your back to do things with the nation and with our money that have nothing to do with us. Wouldn't you agree?
100%, Mike. We talked about that a lot when you and I were doing the Corlin Hartfield Report years and years ago. But there are a lot of people out there trying to separate us from our money. More importantly, I think there are a lot of people out there who are trying their damnedest to separate us from the truth in our society. And that scares the daylights out of me, Mike.
Well, that's starting from in grade school. Once they stop teaching the history to a large extent, that cuts a citizen of a sovereign country, it cuts him off from his roots.
Right.
So you don't know what you've come from, you don't know where you are, and you are then apt to be a victim of the next sales guy who comes along with an explanation.
Right.
Whether it's communism or some other such thing, any system that they can say is better because you have no idea where you are. So maybe it is better,
Yeah, but I got to tell you, Mike, I think that's happening right now. And I think the Democratic Party is absolutely a genius in terms, if a party can be a genius. I think the Democratic Party is an absolute genius in making us believe what they want us to believe. The only anomaly to that that has occurred very recently is the Republicans, with their majority in the House and with their House Speaker, I think are now slowly possibly getting back into power. What do you think, Miguel?
I think you're right. I think if Trump were to get back in, we would see some major, major changes, although they're still going to fight him tooth and nail in the courts. They're doing, I've never seen anything politically like what they've done to Donald Trump.
Right.
You know what? I love the fact that what Trump has done is outed all these people. This was going on for a long time, but nobody knew it.
Right.
And he forced their hand. He made them come out of the night into the day.
I agree.
It's just to look at it takes your breath away.
You know, it really does take your breath away. There's no question about that. When he talked about clearing out the swamp, nobody applauded more than I did. Mike, we got to wrap this up in about a minute and a half, so just keep that in mind.
All right. Well, it's hard to say what will happen to Donald Trump because they are working overtime to tie him up in lawsuits, take his money,
right,
take his dignity. And you know, I think the end game a long time ago, Al, was to put him in court, find him guilty of something, and then tie the knot by saying, now you've done that, you can't run for president.
I don't think that's going to happen. I think somehow he and his legal team will get around that. But it's hard to say. That's my opinion quite fervently right now, though, Mike.
But that was the end game, I think. Now, that was what was dreamed up a long time ago, and they're working it as hard as they can.
Now, yeah, they are. You bet.
Maybe they won't get it done. Maybe you're right. I hope you're right. But it is going to weaken him. He's spending a lot of money that he could spend on a campaign.
Right, I agree.
But I would also agree with you immediately when he said drain the swamp, he pretty well put himself on the cross.
Yes, he did. I agree, Mike. I got my time mixed up a little bit. We've actually got a minute left. We have to cut this at 10 minutes. We're at 9 minutes and 8 seconds right now. Keep that in mind, Miguel.
All right. Okay. Listen, I'd like to ask you if you think, are you pessimistic or optimistic about the future?
I'd like to do a daily editorial on that because I'd like to think about it a little bit. I am at this moment in time fairly pessimistic, and I'd like to know if there's any reason whatsoever for me to be optimistic. We're down to 30 seconds. Let's talk about that one day this week in an editorial, Mike. How's that?
Okay.
Hey, you guys, you're going to enjoy Mike's participation on the show. He's a genius. We'll see you next week or maybe during the week. Okay. I didn't tell you about... Oh, hang on a minute. Sorry.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.